Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and time for another edition of Garden Talk. And on this edition, Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent, joins us by telephone, and we're really pleased to have her with us today to talk about all the things that are going on out in the lawn and out in the garden. If you have some questions, guess what? Every line's already filled, but here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. So send us an email, give us a call. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Sharon, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here on this 4th of July weekend. I know that maple trees have come up for so plenty of problems, especially the silver maples. What's been the problem with those maple trees?
Well, yeah, we've been getting lots and lots of calls. It seems that maple trees, particularly silver maples and their relatives, all around the state have had black blotches on the leaves, kind of irregular patches, and it has caused some concern with people because as they look closely, they see the leaves look kind of crumpled, and those areas now are drying out, and so it looks like a really serious problem. It's actually a leaf spot fungus. Actually, two fungi. One of the fungi we're very familiar with, and that is the anthracnose fungus, and that's not a big deal, but we get it almost every year. And then there's a second one this year called Venturia. But regardless of what they're called, the two together are making the symptoms look a lot worse. But don't panic. It really isn't causing much trouble for your maple tree. Nothing you need to do. And at this point, there's nothing you can do. As those leaves fall, and then this fall when they do drop completely, rake the leaves up and try and get them off your property. Take them to the yard waste recycling facility. Don't put them in your home compost unless you're a really good hot composter. And that's really all you need to do. And it's largely weather dependent, so I doubt we'll have much trouble with it again next year. But as I say, it's not hurting the trees, so don't worry and don't panic.
All right. Well, Polly in Chippewa has a question for you, so let us go to Polly. Hi, Polly.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad I could get in on this. And we have two apple trees, and we only put them in about 4 years ago. And the one doesn't bear. It's going backwards. And then the other one is doing real well. But I notice a lot of mold on the one that's doing nothing. Mold on the stem, big blotches. And on the other one, it's beginning to get small blotches of mold on the stem, and I wondered if that could be why the first one isn't producing, and if it could be dangerous for the other one.
What kind of apple trees do you have?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
Are they crab apples or
no? They're regular apple.
Okay.
Well, blotches of mold on the stem may be what's called lichens. And lichens are really an association between a fungus and an algae, and they don't really cause problems for the plant. Any other type of mold on the stem would be kind of unusual to me. I don't know of anything that does that typically on apple trees. Lichens aren't really causing any problems, so I don't think the two things are related. Now, what is causing the apples to not bear or to not be thriving? Probably environmental conditions more than anything. And it's a matter of having kept them well watered. There are insect and disease problems that apple trees have, and if the last couple of years they've had these disease problems, they could be kind of waning because of that. If they've been producing flowers but then the fruit don't form, that could be from poor pollination. So it could be a lot of things. I think good, tender, loving care is the most of what you want to look at. If you're getting, the only thing that I think could really start to make them decline quickly would be powdery mildew. If you have real serious powdery mildew or fire blight. Now, powdery mildew, you'll see that the new leaves, as they come out, start to turn reddish. They kind of curl and crumple. and you may see a whitish powder on the leaf surface. And if that's happening a lot, then the tree doesn't make large enough leaves to nourish itself. So that's a fungal disease, needs to be treated starting early in the spring. Fire blight, if it's a fire blight susceptible variety, fire blight symptoms are a blackening of the new growth, and that new growth then forms what's called shepherd's crooks. It's a kind of a hooking, and it looks like it's been blasted by a blowtorch. So unless you're seeing those symptoms, I think just good, tender, loving care, you know, mulch the area around the root zone, water regularly. They need to be in full sun. And we do have a good publication on the UW Extension Learning Store website, the website for our publications. That's learningstore.uwex.edu. And the publication is called Growing Apples in Wisconsin. So I'd suggest to take a look at that and maybe able to identify a few more things to do differently.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
They're in soil that isn't really the richest. It's and they're not in... they're in
soil.
Quite a bit of sun. It's almost continual, but I wonder if the soil, if they need to be fertilized.
Yes, possibly. Fertilizing apples once a year is probably a good idea. Production-bearing apples, yeah, once a year is a good idea. And I'm not exactly sure of the schedule for that, but that would be identified in that publication.
So get a copy of that publication, Polly, and thank you very much for calling. And Mary in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about pruning clematis.
Mm-hmm.
I have two beautiful vines growing up the same trellis, and they're about 3 or 4 years old, two different colors, and they're absolutely astounding. It stops my neighbors in their tracks.
Oh, lovely.
And they're in full sun, and they have cool roots, and I sweeten the soil about once a year with a little lime.
Okay.
However, they are really getting out of hand, getting very tangled and almost pulling the trellis over. And I haven't touched them as far as pruning. But I know there are some clematis that bloom on new vines and some bloom on old vines.
Yeah.
And I believe these two, since I haven't touched it, they just bloom all over every spring on all those vines that are just left over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to cut it back a little bit and start training the vines a little better. And I was wondering if the best time is for late fall or early spring?
Well, as a general rule with pruning, late winter, early spring is the best time to do that.
Okay.
And if they're flowering without your having done anything with them, they probably are the type that flower on old wood or old and new wood.
Okay, yeah, I thought it might be old and new.
There is a group that flowers on both. And any pruning that you want to do, just make sure, you know, with a clematis that flowers on old and new wood, it doesn't matter what wood you're taking out because it'll still flower. And you'll just need to remove the wood that's, you know, the size and shape that you need to reduce the plant to. So just prune back to a bud or another branch. I would suggest doing that in late winter, early spring.
So that means then I won't quite be seeing any green yet, will I?
No. Yeah, you should do it before the growth starts.
Before the green.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate your advice.
Good luck.
Thanks, Mary. Janice in Ozaukee County. On to you now. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I mentioned that I bought my hydrangeas, and I've had them for about maybe 3-4 years. They haven't bloomed. One is the Annabelle, and one is a pink. And I fertilized them with that special Miracle Grow acidic fertilizer, and kept them watered. On the east side of the house, they get partial sun.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do?
It's probably two different things, a different situation with each plant. The Annabelle hydrangeas flower on new wood only. And there have been cases where, for one reason or another, we're really not sure why, there will be an Annabelle plant that just doesn't flower. And, you know, you can wait 3, 4, 5 years, and they just won't flower. And, unfortunately, it's inexplicable. Maybe time to give up and try another one. There's probably nothing from what you've said. There's nothing you're doing wrong. If they're not flowering and they've got enough sun, but they don't need tons of sun, and they're being watered, and, you know, there shouldn't be any problem with them. The other one, however, is one of the pink types, and those are the hydrangea macrophylla. That is not a hardy, totally hardy hydrangea. The plant is hardy, but the flower buds are not necessarily hardy. Consequently, those flower buds, which are formed one year and flower the next year, get killed over the winter. So there, you can be growing the hydrangea plant and never get flowers because they're always killed in the winter, especially if it's the Nikko blue or that Nikko type, if it's a straight macrophylla. Now, the newer cultivars that have been recently introduced, Endless Summer and
yes,
its buddies.
I have one of those.
Okay. Those flower on old wood and new wood. So the old wood buds may be killed, but you have to wait for new growth to occur every year for flowering to occur. And we're finding that it takes a good 3 years probably to get those well enough established that you're going to get some pretty decent bloom on them. So with those, I'd say just be patient, if that's what you've got, is one of those Endless Summer types.
Well, it's going to be blooming. I have buds already.
Okay.
So I have one more question.
Yeah.
I am getting rust on some rose leaves and also on my Veronica. Is it just a fungus? Is that what that is?
Yes, that's caused by a fungus. There's actually a couple of, there's many different kinds of rust fungi. Different ones infect different plants. So the rose isn't catching it from the Veronica and vice versa. They're two separate incidents. Since you're already seeing symptoms of it, there's not much you can do except to remove leaves.
I've been doing that.
Okay, and dispose of those, not in your compost pile, but get them off the property so that you're not reusing them when the spores aren't around again. And that's pretty much all you can do. It's real weather-dependent, so you may be having problems this year, and you might not in other years because of the temperature and moisture conditions during the spring, and the requirements vary from plant to plant, whether you know how cool and how much rain we need to have and stuff. So it may be why you're having it this year and you don't have a problem with it other years. Good air circulation is another way to kind of reduce that because, you know, not having the plants too close together will allow air to dry off the leaves better, and then you don't get as much infection.
All right. All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Janice. Marsha from Waukesha emailed to say that their lawns and gardens are being overtaken by Chinese lanterns. Digging up the root systems is overwhelming. What are they, and is there any other method you could suggest for getting rid of them?
Oh, well, if it's in a lawn situation, physalis is what the Chinese lantern plant is. It's a broadleaf plant, and there are broadleaf weed killers like 2,4-D, a real common one. Weed Be Gone contains 2,4-D, that will kill broadleaf weeds and not bother your grass. So that shouldn't be too difficult to control. It's when you have them growing up in amongst your other perennials and annuals and shrubs, which are also broadleaves, that you might have a problem because you can't get that herbicide on the desirable plants. So there, all you can do is pull and try and continually pull them out so you starve out the root system, and it is difficult to do. Being a little bit more detailed about your application of the herbicide, you can try to protect the plants around that weed with cardboard or covering them with plastic or sheets or something and having only the physalis, the Chinese lantern, exposed and then spraying that while you've protected the plants around it from
sure.
the spray. That might be another way to go about it, too. But that, too, is, you know, a little more time-consuming and labor-intensive.
Andy in Fifield, you are up next. Hi, Andy.
Hi. I have a daughter problem in my grass, and it's choking out all the grass. I want to know how to kill that.
Daughter?
Yeah.
In the lawn?
Well, it's not a very good lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, that's a very good question. Dodder is a real interesting plant. It's one of those obligate parasites,
yeah.
sort of like mistletoe is and, you know, a few other plants. And it's real viney and twiny, and It surprises me that it's growing in grass, though, because it really needs to sink its little feeding pegs into a plant to, you know, take advantage of that plant's
right.
circulatory system. And to do that in lawn,
Well, there are other plants in it. It's
in
not
that area.
Just all grass.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know a herbicide recommendation for dodder, and I have a feeling that there isn't one. Because it's an obligate parasite, it's very different physiologically than either broadleaves or grass plants. And I think physical or manual control is about the only way that you can deal with it. But that is probably more of a field crop weed. And I'm not familiar with what the pesticide recommendations or herbicide recommendations would be for that. Now, here I think I might recommend having you contact your county extension office and talk to the ag agent in the county. Because I think dodder is more of a field crop problem.
I think
they may know what to do.
I think you can use a pre-emergence herbicide.
Really?
On it. Something like Dacthal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been control of it that way.
Okay.
But it's probably better. Now, don't take my word for it. You might want to check with the extension office on that.
Yeah.
All right, I will.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I think a pre-emergence will work.
Huh.
Peter in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I had a question about peonies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we just planted some last year and didn't get any flowers, but this year we got a couple flowers. We had a bunch of buds, but some of them kind of dried out, it seemed. And my partner's real fond of deadheading plants, taking mm-hmm. the blooms off, you know, to promote more flowering. But mm-hmm. I thought maybe with the peonies, you're supposed to allow them to build that, like, seed head they get, as I remember as a kid.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, pinching peonies to encourage more branching, and that doesn't really work. Deadheading, once the flower has bloomed and removing a faded flower, is recommended. But I think if you pinch back, like on some plants, you can pinch back, and then more branching will occur, and then each of those new branches will produce a flower. So you multiply the number of branches and the number of flowers. I don't think that works on peonies. I think it's just over time, as the plant gets larger and the crown gets larger, more stems come from the base, and from that you get more flowers. The reason they turned kind of dried out, the ones that did form, I don't know. There is a fungal disease that affects the flowers, the blossoms, if they're kept too wet. It's a botrytis blight or gray mold, and the control for that is just to not keep the soil too wet and to have good air circulation around the plant so it's not packed in too tightly with other plants. And then when you see those buds, just those blossoms that have been affected by this, cut them back and then remove those and get those out of the area. If you've gotten flowers this year, that's good news. That's
yeah.
a good sign.
Yep.
And I would recommend just cutting back any old flower buds that are on there or faded flowers. And I'm thinking about fertility, too, if it's a good idea to fertilize now. I guess I would fertilize just once this season. And then at the end of the season, be sure you clean up all that old dead foliage. Get it out of there so there any fungal spores that are on there will be gone for next year. And hope for the best for next year.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. Jim Packard, our producer. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a gardening or question or comment, I hope you'll join in today. Larry Mueller with my guest Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. Glad to have her along and certainly happy to have you listening in as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. So give a call, shoot us an email, and we'll get you on. Anne Marie in South Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about dividing hibiscus. I have a dwarf variety called Disco Bell, and they've been in for probably about 7 years now, and they're beautiful. You know, they only get about 3 or 4 feet high, but they have these beautiful, huge blossoms. And unlike my other perennials, the old stems are really woody, and I can't just pull them out. I just have to cut them down because they're really hard. And I think the old woody stems that are still all in there from each of these 7 years, I think they're kind of blocking new stems from coming up, and I'm wondering if I can just kind of dig in all those hard stems and divide them, or what would be the recommendation?
Well, I don't have personal experience with hardy hibiscus.
I see.
But from your description, they do form woody stems, and then my question is, do those woody stems continue to produce leaves and flowers year after year?
No.
Those die back,
yes,
and they're done.
Right.
Okay.
So it's all the new stems that flower.
Mm-hmm. I think what then would be called for is a good pruning at the end of the season every year or the beginning of the next season every year to get rid of the old stems, since they're not going to produce anything in the coming year. And by doing that, keeping the plant open and having there be space for the new stems that come up every year. I doubt, since it's woody, that you would be able to dig the whole plant out and divide it up.
Okay.
That would be my guess, is you don't really have that crown that you can kind of divide out, and then there's more eyes inside there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that would be my guess, especially with a plant that has a woody stem.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Joanne in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Joanne. Joanne, are you there?
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Larry?
Yes.
I have two questions for her.
Okay.
One is, she may be knowing, in my lawn, front lawn, I have some weed-like thing which looks like wild strawberry leaves. And I understand, I showed it to one of the naturalists, she said it is a mustard family, but it did not get killed with the weed killer. And so, you know, what do I do now? It's spreading, like Creeping Charlie.
Mm. Mm.
And I don't know, you know, what to do now.
Well, it may be a case of trying a different herbicide. If you've been using herbicides on your lawn, you may have been using a herbicide that it's not susceptible to. There are basically three broadleaf herbicides, and one of them is 2,4-D, and that's the most common one, and most of the herbicide products, especially those that are sold for lawns, will have 2,4-D in them. Then some have 2,4-D and MCPP, or Mecaprop, is another one. And then there's a third one called Dicamba. There's another one, however, that we're recommending now for Creeping Charlie called Triclopyr. And that one might be one that you can try. Not all weeds are susceptible to any one of these herbicides. And so you kind of have to find the right one to be susceptible to it. I'm kind of grabbing a publication here to look at. And I think the weed that you may be talking about is called Black Medic. It has little yellow flowers on it, really, really tiny little balls.
Right.
Okay. That's Black Medic. It is an annual, unfortunately, because that means that all those little yellow balls will then produce seeds, and those seeds come back next year. So a pre-emergent herbicide next spring may be the best way to deal with it because it's an annual. And I'm looking here at a chart that's provided in one of our extension publications, and it says that that plant is resistant to 2,4-D, meaning that, you know, your typical broadleaf weed killer probably won't control it. And then Mecaprop, it's only intermediately susceptible to that, but it is susceptible to Dicamba.
Okay.
So you'd look for a product that contains Dicamba. Mm-hmm. And one warning about Dicamba is that you should only use it once a year under over the root zones of woody trees and shrubs. So I'd look for, and then I'd look on the label of triclopyr also and see if it is effective against black metic.
Okay. Another quick question is also, I have about a three-year-old trumpet vine, mm-hmm. which is on the west side in the full sun. It's thriving very well, but it hasn't produced any flower yet.
Mm-hmm. Have you fertilized it?
Yes.
Stop.
Oh,
that may be what's causing it not to flower. Trumpet vines really like poor soil. They like very lean soil. They don't like lots of fertilizer. And that fertilizer, on plants like that, fertilizer will make them produce lots and lots of leaves, but no flowers.
So just water them?
Yeah. Just kind of leave them alone. They're hardy and vigorous all on their own. In fact, some people have trouble with them because they're so hardy and vigorous. So doing nothing with them probably will be sufficient. Let them go for a couple of years. And I don't know if you'll get flowers next year if you don't fertilize again this year. It may take 2 years before you get flowers. But I bet that's what it is. If the soil's too rich, they won't flower very well.
So there you have it, Joanne.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. Let's go to Eleanor in Madison. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, I was just calling with a suggestion about the beetles that get all over raspberry plants. They're so hard to pick off because as soon as you touch the leaf, they all just tumble onto the ground. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, under all the raspberry plants, they're impossible to find. So what I do is I take a kind of flat plastic container, such as you might put food in to store in the refrigerator, and I fill it with soapy water, and I hold it under the leaves. You barely touch the leaf, and they all tumble into the soapy water.
Yeah.
Just go from leaf to leaf and plant to plant, and you can get, it's disgusting when you put them all together, hundreds of these beetles.
Uh-huh.
And they meet their demise pretty quickly in this soapy water, and then they're done.
What beetles, what do they look like?
Oh, they're those beautifully iridescent.
Oh, Japanese beetles?
Japanese beetles. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That is an excellent way to deal with Japanese beetles. It's a little labor-intensive. You know, oftentimes people want to just spray something, but this really works. And then you're not spraying something. You're not using a pesticide. You're not using a pesticide on a food crop. And
mm-hmm. It doesn't really take that long.
No.
Because you're just taking advantage of their quick tumble.
Yes.
it really, really doesn't take too long, and it really works.
Really works.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Excellent. Good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. Bye-bye. Appreciate that call. All right. So that's one way to deal with those devils.
Mm.
Amy and DePere, hi to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a question. I have a honeysuckle vine that looks really sick. It has a lot of mildew, and it didn't bloom very well this year. And I'm wondering if I should be cutting that back quite heavily after it blooms every year. I've read kind of conflicting information on the internet. Some says it blooms on new wood. Some says it blooms on old. How should I be caring for that?
Mm. And it probably does depend on which one you have, because there are a couple of different honeysuckle vines. They are woody plants, though, and so they should be able to have a stem that then produces new growth every year, and even if it flowers on new wood, that new growth should produce flowers. With the mildew, it makes me wonder if it's in maybe a little bit of a shaded area and if it doesn't have good air circulation, because those are the two conditions that kind of favor powdery mildew, and mildew will prevent them from flowering and will prevent them from thriving, especially if they get it every year.
Yep.
Yeah, the best way to control mildew, you need to spray real regularly, and you can try the formulation that uses baking soda and oil to do that with. I would test it somewhere on the plant first, because I don't know if it will adversely affect the leaves or not. We recommend it for roses, but we're finding that it can be used on a lot of other things too, and it's a non-toxic way to deal with mildew. There are fungicides to treat mildew with, but if you've got the conditions that are going to promote mildew, you know, it's a kind of a never-ending battle.
Right.
So,
And I didn't know, so it really does depend on the variety, whether I need to really severely cut it back or
if you leave that main stem growing. Yeah, I think so. I think it does. I think there are a couple of different species of honeysuckle vine.
Okay. So I'll just have to do more checking and get that exact variety then.
That, and kind of watch what portion of the plant it produces its flowers on. And if it's producing flowers on new growth, then you want to do everything you can to stimulate new growth. If it's flowering on old wood, then you want to be sure to leave enough old wood so that it has some flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Amy. And Amber, we turn to you next. Hi, Amber.
Hi. I'm calling with a suggestion. Earlier, somebody had called. They have problems with their apple tree.
Yes.
My grandparents experienced a very similar thing. What was happening was the birds in the area had a similar bacteria, like a foot and mouth disease kind of, on their tongue. And what they ended up doing was cutting off all the bad apples, because the whole plant, the whole tree was not affected. And they went to a pet store and they picked up an additive that they put in the bird bath or the water that the birds were drinking to treat the birds. And they put like rubber snakes in the tree so that the birds that weren't healed weren't continuing with the tree, continuing to go by the tree.
Uh-huh.
The birds were actually putting a bacteria onto the plant.
Wow. I have not heard. Thanks for calling. Have you ever heard of that, Sharon?
Never heard of that.
And that worked.
It did. Actually, the tree that year wasn't good, but the following year, my grandparents kind of did the same thing while it was still in bloom, and they had a good crop the next year.
Hmm.
Interesting. And I wonder if the two things are correlated or not. That's, I guess that's the thing with, you know, research, is that sometimes it's circumstantial that things appear that they have helped when it may have been other circumstances. Because I've never heard that. Never, ever heard of something like that.
I don't know. I guess they live in the farm area, and the farmer neighbor kind of suggested.
They try that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. That's a new one on me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that call, Amber. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question or comment, if you have an open line or two, we'll get you on pretty fast. Let's go to Kathy in La Crosse next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there. I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
I live in a condo, and I've got a little patio garden. I've got two beautiful tomato plants in about 18-inch across pots. And I'm wondering, should I trim off some of the bottom leaves to help the fruit on the top produce better?
Well, cutting off bottom leaves won't help the fruit on the top produce any better.
Okay.
And if the bottom leaves are in good condition, they're not yellowing, they're not spotted, leave them on, because those leaves are helping to nourish the plant and keep it growing more vigorously. And the more vigorously it grows, the better it flowers and the better the fruit will form. But if you're seeing discoloration on the leaves or spotting, which is very common with tomatoes because of a couple of disease problems, then remove those leaves as you start to see those spots or the discoloration. If it's really, really dense at the bottom or anywhere along the plant and you're starting to see those spots, then removing those leaves or removing even some of the healthy leaves will help, because it allows better air circulation through the plant, which helps to reduce the amount of disease.
Okay, and how do you suggest cutting the leaves off? I mean, they're pretty thick. It's probably the stalk itself of those bottom leaves is almost thumb size.
Wow, that's a healthy, vigorous
plant.
They're very
healthy.
Then I would use a pruner if you're going to remove them. But if they're that vigorous, you probably that healthy, you probably don't need to remove them. Like I say, unless it's showing signs of disease.
Okay, and then I've got a coreopsis, which is a perennial, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In a pot. How can I winter that? Can I just put it in my garage and see what happens?
You can put it into your garage, but if it's not an attached garage and doesn't sound like that's the case, then it's going to be a lot like having it be outside. If you can surround the pot with something to provide some additional insulation, that could help. Sometimes people pile straw up around things that they need that are above ground that they need to protect for the winter. You can put it into a box and then stuff the box with straw or leaves. You don't need to cover the whole pot, the whole plant, but anything to provide a little more insulation or a lot more insulation actually is what's needed, because that pot will freeze solid and it'll be too much for the roots. In ground, it doesn't freeze as, the temperatures don't get as cold. It freezes, but the temperatures don't get as cold. So it's protecting
that
root.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Otter in Dallas, Wisconsin, your turn. Hello.
Hello. I have a slippery elm tree in my backyard, and I noticed this spring that, that the only light green spring-colored leaves on it are from some new sprouts at the very bottom of it. The rest of it has dark, either dark green leaves or black leaves already.
Hmm.
And I guess I'm The light green colored leaves are new growth, probably, right?
Correct, yes.
And that's occurring down near the base of the plant.
Yeah, it's actually about 10 feet off the ground, but they're brand new branches on it.
Hmm. I guess the question would be, why is it sprouting and sprouting new leaves at this time when really it should have been done with its new growth already? I don't think that there's probably anything wrong with it, and you shouldn't be getting any new growth in the upper portion of the tree at this point. New growth has occurred since the spring and is now matured and darkened, as you suggest, the leaves darken to a darker green for the summer. So I don't know that there's anything really wrong with that, unless there is like lots of this new bright colored growth. Is there?
No.
No, okay. Then I think it's just, I don't know, maybe just a response of the plant to the weather conditions. Did you get lots of rain a couple of weeks ago?
That's a good question. I'm a semi-truck driver, so I don't get to see my tree as often as I think.
Yeah, I doubt that there's anything seriously wrong with it, but, you know, examine it closely and keep an eye on it.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pearl is the traditional gift for a 30th anniversary, but the new one is a broadcast concert from the stage of the Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua. I'm Tom Martin Erickson with two ways to join the party. The first is in the big tent on the big lake. Ticket information at bigtop.org. And the second way? Tune in Sunday at 5 for Simply Folk, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Ganchard Nursery and Landscapes of Madison, offering full-service landscape design and installation to Madison and surrounding areas since 1953. Project portfolio and information available on the web at ganchard.com.
We're dealing with all kinds of lawn and garden questions on this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with Sharon Morrissey. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. And Mary in Madison has phoned in, so let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Well, good morning, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to the comments by the lady who had a hardy hibiscus.
Yeah.
And her concern about old wood, dead new wood. Many, many years ago, when we lived in Syracuse, New York, at our home gardens, there was a hibiscus plant that I discovered in June. Actually, it was late June when it decided to wake up on the west side of our house. I thought it was just an open spot. Obviously, the plant had been cut down to the ground level by the previous owner, who was from Wales. She was a perennial gardener and left me beautiful plants to take care of. So for the few years we lived in that home, at the end of every growing season in the fall when a good hard frost had come, I would do as she had done. I cut everything down to the ground, perhaps, you know, 2 or 3 inches, and just patiently waited for the following June to come, when up would sprout these little sticks, almost like a hosta would shoot up, and could put on as much as 6 inches in a warm evening. And before you knew it, I had a beautiful bush about 4 feet tall with pie plant flowers. It was lovely. So I hope it's the same variety. It certainly worked for us, and maybe that'll work for your caller.
Mary, great. Thank you so much. What do you think, Sharon?
That sounds great, and it sounds like the perfect suggestion. Since it does not seem to flower on the older stems, you might as well cut them all down at the end of the season.
Thanks, Mary. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It's a great story. Let's try some more callers here. Marty in Lake Nabagamon. We go to you next. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good afternoon. I have an iris I think needs to be transplanted. It's not a bearded iris. It's got long, narrow leaves, and it almost looks like a wild one, like a blue flag. My theory of transplanting is you can sneak up on anything and get it in and out really quick, and you can kind of transplant anything at any point. But I really love this plant, and I'd hate to think that my theory would fall apart with it. So I'm wondering, what am I going to find? I've never transplanted an iris like this. Am I going to find rhizomes? Do I transplant them in little clumps? When would be a good time to do that? It only got 2 blossoms on it, and it has finished blooming.
Yeah. Well, maybe wait until, like, September to sneak up on it, okay? I think that probably would be a safer time to do it, since it is an early season flower. Then, as a general rule, digging, dividing, and transplanting in the fall is what's recommended. And what you'll find is a crown that all these leaves are arising from. They do not have the rhizomes like the bearded iris. And so it's a crown that can be kind of teased apart by hand, depending on how big and old it is and how long it's been in place. You may need to get a little bit more aggressive with it and use a fork, you know, a garden fork or a knife or something to pull apart these pieces. And then each chunk that has several good fans left in it can be replanted. So make sure there's plenty of root and several fans of leaves. But it's more like other perennials that have a crown that you can pull apart.
Okay. Can I ask one more question there,
sure.
Mary?
Sure.
Our broccoli plants are looking very odd this year. They're sort of weaving back and forth. They're not growing up in a straight line. They're going this way and that way, sort of corkscrewing around. It's real weird. Mm. The leaves look absolutely fine, but we've had to kind of prop them up with straw. Any thoughts about that? I have no reason to believe that they're not going to be okay, but any thoughts about why they might be doing that?
Herbicide drift, maybe?
Oh, gosh, I hope not. We're very organic, and I don't think we have 40 acres. I don't think anybody around us is gardening.
Okay.
It sounds like the stems have stayed real thin, and that they've then not been able to support the leaf growth up on top. Because I've seen that with coal crops before, too, where that stem is kind of, it kind of gets started when it's in the seedling stage, especially if it's a relatively large leaf while it's still in the pack before you transplant it into the ground. And I don't know then, once you get it into the ground, why it would continue to do that and go, you know, kind of weaving back and forth. Maybe the weather conditions. I don't think we've had a lot of changes between cold and hot and cold and hot until recently. So I don't know what causes that. There are a couple of diseases of coal crops, but we don't see them typically in home gardens that much. Unless maybe you're not rotating and putting coal crops in the same spot year after year.
No, this is a brand new bed.
Okay.
We're just putting in for the first time.
Yeah, I would kind of not expect that, especially if the rest of the plant is looking fine. I don't know. Maybe staking it upright and helping it to stay upright. You're propping it right now with straw, but maybe a stake would be helpful.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, Marty. Becky in Winneconne. On to you now. Hi, Becky.
Hi. I have a question about a PG hydrangea, the little standard. If the leaves were coming out in the spring and it was looking good, and all of a sudden the leaves just kind of quit growing. They're only about an inch long. And now the plant is starting to get covered with kind of a fine thread-like, almost like spider web on it.
Oh, interesting. That sounds like spider mites.
Yeah, it does.
They're called spider mites because they make that webbing, but they actually are a mite, not a spider. And if there are a lot of them, which there can be, especially in hot, dry settings, they're piercing, sucking insects, and they're very, very tiny, but they pierce the leaf, suck out some juice, pierce the leaf, suck out some juice, and they move all over, and there's lots of them. And that really will affect the plant. It'll weaken the plant. It can make the leaves stay smaller. And that webbing suggests to me that there are lots of them. Because by the time you see that webbing, there are a lot of these spider mites. The good news is that blasting that plant with a strong spray of water repeatedly, you know, once every few days, go out and blast it really good with a strong spray of water, knocks the spider mites off. It keeps the moisture level higher, and spider mites don't tolerate moist conditions at all.
Okay, okay.
So that's what I'd recommend.
Okay, one other quick question. I have several beautiful poppy plants. Poppies came up, the buds formed, and then some of them just dried up, but the other ones, when the flowers opened, they just sort of dried up. Are poppies susceptible to a lot of moisture? Can that happen?
You mean that the flowers would be affected by a lot of moisture?
Yeah.
And that in moisture, you mean on the flower from a sprinkler or from rain?
Yeah, or like all because of all the rain that we've had.
That the soil got too moist.
Yeah.
I suppose that's a possibility. If you had a lot of rain over a pretty long period of time, I mean, if there's one rain incident like we had a couple weeks ago where it was 6 inches of rain all at once and that was it, unless the soil really held that rain, I wouldn't expect it to bother it. But overwatering may affect that.
Okay.
Trying to think what else could possibly be doing that. If the root system has been compromised somehow, and root rot can compromise the root system, that would prevent the flowers from developing well. I guess I would dig up a plant and see what the root system looks like. If it looks like white and kind of crispy roots is a good thing. Strong, sturdy, snap when they're bent is a good thing. But otherwise soft, mushy, brown, that would probably suggest root rot. And
the plants are humongous. They're really healthy looking. And it was just the flowers that were affected.
Yeah.
And so, okay. And I just, one more thing, the lady with the hibiscus, I cut mine back every year, and it comes up beautifully, too.
That's good. Right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's go to Ruth and the Maquanago next. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. I think you've half answered my problem. I have tomato plants that are producing wonderful green foliage and good healthy stalks, not one single blossom. Is there any way of counteracting too much fertilizer, which I imagine is my problem?
Watering a lot, probably, but by now the plant's probably taken up that fertilizer. As you water, the nitrogen is washed away from the root zone, so flushing the root zone a couple of times, but any fertilizer that's been taken up already, not much you can do about that. There is, if you do get some, if you do get some flower blossoms, then you can do a fruit set. They have a spray you can use that's a gibberellic acid that helps to set the fruit, so you're sure that those flowers set. But, yeah, it sounds like it is a case of over-fertilization, and unfortunately I don't think there's much you can do about that except to stop.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I tried, we tried at home one of these upside-down tomato planters this year, and it's to be perfectly honest, it's the healthiest looking tomato plant we have.
I am growing two of them myself because they're so popular this year, And I've seen it done, that they're called topsy-turvies, the one as seen on TV.
Oh.
I also have one that's in a bucket that has a hole drilled in the bottom of it, just a 5-gallon bucket, same sort of thing. And, yeah, they're growing real nice and vigorously and healthy. I think one of the things you may avoid with the tomatoes hanging like that is that you might avoid that early blight and septoria blight that we get on tomatoes often, because those are caused by spores splashing up from the soil. And so you're not going to have that with the hanging tomatoes. So it'll be a real interesting comparison.
Yeah, sure will.
At the end of the season, I really want to hear how people have done with those.
Trevor in Sheboygan, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just have a quick question. I was kind of hoping you might have some tips as to how to keep rabbits from eating the buds on my lilies, other than fencing them in.
You know, the strategies for dealing with wildlife, you prevent the wildlife from getting to the plant, and that's the fencing in part, or covering, or netting, or whatever you have to do to keep them away. Another tactic is to use a repellent, either a repellent that smells so bad in the area that they don't get close enough to take a bite, or something that you spray on them that they take a bite and then decide not to do it. With lilies, you'd want the area repellent. And a third strategy is the scare devices or scare tactics, where you use moving things, flopping in the breeze, whirligigs, all that sort of thing. And you'll need to change that around, and you'll probably have to use a combination of all three. Also for scare devices, the snake, the blow-up snake on the ground, and the owl, and the eye, big owl eye thing. Those things do actually work, but they have to be combined in order to
be successful. Effective. Yeah, and a dog helps.
Dogs help.
Dogs can really help. Someone sent us a picture the other day of their Samoyeds digging out ground squirrels out of the lawn. And the lawn was a patchwork of holes where the Samoyeds had been after the chipmunks. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent, giving us lots of great advice on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. Glad to have Sharon with us today, and certainly happy to have you listening in. Lots of callers online. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. But let's turn to Jan in Manitowish Waters now. Jan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Sharon. After listening to the news, it's hard to see this as a problem, but it is a problem to me.
Yeah.
You know, last week when it was so extremely warm on Thursday, I live on a lake, and the children left a raft on my grass. And on Sunday, the grass started turning brown, and now I have a 5x5 square of grass that looks like it's dead. And I'm wondering how you might manage that to make it nice and green again.
Well, I'm going to guess that the portion that died was just the leaves. It probably didn't kill the plants themselves. Yeah, the roots themselves.
Okay.
So I would suspect that it will start growing again on its own, and kept watered. I mean, now you're fortunate that it then got nice and cool, and we've got a little moisture in the air, so that those are good conditions for the grass to regrow. If you don't see new growth, then you're just going to have to treat it as a dead patch that you're starting over with, dig out the old stuff, work up the soil, select the right grass seed, put in some new grass seed, lightly rake it in, tamp it down, keep it moist.
Mm-hmm. How soon would you think I would know whether or not that was what I was going to need to do?
Probably within the week.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd give it another week and see how it looks at the end of the next week.
And should I water it every day now?
No, I would be concerned that might be too much.
Okay.
Only if it's really, really hot. Mm-hmm. And the soil there is drying out, because it's more exposed, it's going to dry out faster. So kind of keep an eye on it. If it's dried out, water it. But it's not like keeping seed moist, where you do have to keep it constantly moist.
Okay.
Just enough to let the roots put out some new growth.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Sharon.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks for calling. Georgina and Nina, your turn. Hi, Georgina.
Hello. Thanks for the show.
You bet.
I really appreciate all the advice. And just to say, my tomato plant, my topsy-turvy, is very sad-looking compared to my neighbor's that's in the ground. So I think I'm going to try her way next year. My question is about roses. I have been getting for the last 2 years some kind of bug, which I never see, that cuts circular in my leaves.
Yeah.
And it's very symmetrical. It looks perfect, like they punched it with a punch press or something.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what it is, fall flies. I don't know how to treat it. Could you help me?
Yes, I can. That's what's called a leaf cutter bee. They're solitary bees that live in the ground, and they land on plant leaves and roses that seem to really like, and they cut these little circular patches out of the edge of the leaf. It's not a circle in the center of a leaf or anything. It's always at the edge, and they it's a very regular pattern. They're very, very precise. Then they take that little chunk of leaf, and they take it down to line the cells of where they lay their eggs. And that way, when the eggs hatch, the larvae have some food. And they also cap off the cells with these little leaf pieces. Not a big deal. It's not really hurting the plant. I know the appearance isn't great, but I would never recommend trying to do anything to prevent the bees or to damage the bees or hurt the bees or kill the bees because, you know, bees are generally pretty good guys.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just kind of put up with it, it's not really hurting anything, and it's providing a little home for a solitary bee that's not going to become an aggressive, you know, swarm of bees or anything.
Mm-hmm. Why my yard? My neighbor doesn't have it.
You're just lucky.
Yeah.
Well, kind of I guess the bee is doing some good, so I'll just have to put up with it. Okay. Thank you for answering my question.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Pat in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I am really coveting a little peach tree at my local nursery, and I don't know if it's too late in the year to plant a peach tree and expect it to survive the winter.
Well, that's a good question. If it is looking healthy and vigorous at your local nursery, and either in a container or bald and burlapped, as long as you can keep it well enough watered to get through the hot part of the summer, you can probably do all right. If it's bald and burlapped, it probably has lost some of its root system. It did lose some of its root system when it was dug. But I bet it's in a container. And in a container, you're never sure if it really was grown in that container or if it was dug and then held as a bare root plant and then potted up. If that's the case, which is usually how they deal with fruit trees, it too doesn't have quite as many roots as it would if it had been grown in the container. So it's important to keep it watered, but if it doesn't produce enough new roots to nourish itself over the summer, it may not do too well. If it's container grown, it has all the roots it ever had, it'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has set several peaches right down at the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Would that indicate that it was container grown?
Not necessarily.
No.
So will they be able to tell me, do you think?
They may be able to. They may be able to. And then when you pull it out of the pot, it's in a container?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. When you pull it out of the pot, and you may even ask them to do this for you, to pull it out of the pot if they're not sure if it's container grown or potted. If it's container grown, it will have this nice tight root ball, this soil mass that's totally impregnated with roots. If it's been potted, then you'll probably have quite a bit of that soil fall away. And the potted one probably doesn't have as many roots. It's going to be hard to keep it well enough watered, and you probably wouldn't be as successful. So you may want to wait until next spring if it's potted.
But if it's container grown, it should do all right.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And keep it watered, keep that water going right up until freeze up. And
yes.
That will help.
And water once a week.
Once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to James in Milwaukee. James, hello.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question here about our back lawn. Between my girlfriend and me, she, I think it looks beautiful. Our back lawn turns into like a purple carpet.
Creeping Charlie.
And she calls it Creeping Charlie because mm-hmm. it's all weed. I think it looks beautiful. But is it dangerous to our pets?
It is not dangerous to your pets, no. If that's your question, no, it's not dangerous to your pets.
Okay. She wants to get rid of it, but I think it looks gorgeous.
I'm going to leave that between
like
the two
a big
of you.
Purple carpet.
I never get in between. Conflicting opinions. The plant doesn't hurt anything, but it does make it difficult to grow the lawn, and lawn is supposed to be lawn grass. A lot of people just put up with Creeping Charlie because it's green, it's holding the soil, it doesn't need mowing very often. And
it looks great.
So, so that's between the two of you. Now, if you should decide, if she convinces you that it needs to be controlled, it's not that easy to do, unfortunately, and you do pretty much have to use herbicides.
So that's one for me.
If it's everywhere, you're going to have to kind of start the lawn over
it's
again
everywhere.
And kill everything off and start it all over again. And even then, there's no guarantee that it's not
No, it
back.
Comes right. But we actually did that once.
Oh, did you?
I actually killed the entire lawn and started over again. And many Wisconsin Public Radio listeners who were at our party here a week or two back will confirm that there's plenty of Creeping Charlie in my lawn. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I personally would like to just kind of put up with it. But, you know, you look at the other folks who have lawns that have no Creeping Charlie in it, and they're a thing of beauty. So it's in the eye of the beholder and what you want your lawn to look like.
There you go, James.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. We're on to you. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I wasn't even going to call, but before the break, the guest, somebody had asked about replanting a cold weather crop. Well, I just got done. I do big container gardens on my deck, and I had a marvelous spinach crop this year, I ate it fresh until I was afraid it was going to bolt. So then I cut the rest of it and blanched and chopped and froze the rest. But now I'm thinking I still have plenty of seed. Can I replant in that same spot? And if so, when?
Yes, you can replant in that same spot, same season. That shouldn't be a problem. When? I would wait until the end of July, mid-July at the very earliest, but the end of July into August, probably all the way through the end of August, early September, you can plant spinach seed and still have a crop. You know, it really does prefer the cool temperatures.
Right.
So if you planted too early, no matter when you plant it in the summer, the seed loves the nice warm soil, so it will germinate and grow. But if you plant it too early and those leaves come up and the temperatures are hot, then it will bolt almost immediately and the leaves will taste kind of bitter and tough. So it's better to wait until August, probably.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah,
all right, thanks a lot for calling. Mary Ann in Edgerton, your turn.
Hi, and first of all, thanks for your program. I learn a lot from it.
Thank you.
I planted English ivy on a retaining wall last year, and it grew very well. This year, I don't know if it was a late bloomer or if I got impatient or both, but I saw the dead woody stems, and I clipped it. And now it is starting now to come up from the ground, and I'm wondering, should I have clipped it, or do you prune it, or how do you care for it?
Well, English ivy, the heterohelix English ivy, is a woody vine, and you really shouldn't have to prune it or cut it at all.
So I should have left all that dead stuff there and just wait for it to come up again?
To leaf out again. It will lose its leaves over the winter. It is a semi-evergreen, meaning that in mild climates or protected locations, it will hold its leaves during the winter. But if the winter is too severe and it doesn't have enough protection, it will lose its leaves. Those stems, if the stems survive, they will put out new leaves. Then kind of wait and see what puts out new leaves and then just cut back the dead stuff.
How long should you wait to see before you cut down the dead stuff?
Well, into May. By May you should have a pretty good idea what's going to leaf out and what's not.
All right, thank you. Then I also have a suggestion. Someone had called about the animals eating their small plants. And
yeah.
I have a very large long hair German Shepherd, and I save his hair all year round. And put that near my all my small plant seedlings, put it right on the ground, and especially my tulip bulbs, because it keeps away the rabbits and the deer, too.
Very good. Yes, that is one of the repellent types recommendations is scent, and using oftentimes with deer and stuff, they will recommend even human hair, but certainly animal hair.
Okay.
Again, it's a combination of tactics are needed to be successful, and what works one time may not work another, and what works in one place may not work in another. It depends on how hungry the animals are, how fearless they are. You know, that really varies, too. But that is a good recommendation, yes.
And thank you very much. As I say, I enjoy your program.
All right. Thanks for calling, Marianne. And we have some open lines, so we can get callers on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to David in Appleton next. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work for a lawn care company, and my particular job is spraying trees and shrubs. And I've gone through one whole series of spraying, especially a lot of crab apple and apple trees, and my customers' leaves are all falling off from apple scab. And I can still see residue from the previous spring, and I'm wondering what's going on here. And I don't have an answer for my customers when they said, hey, how come if you spray it, I still have this problem?
Well, apple scab is kind of a complicated critter. It's a fungus. And it requires a certain length of time where there is a certain amount of moisture on the leaf of the tree at a certain temperature. So that sounds like it's really specific, and it should only be a problem every once in a while because, you know, what are the odds that you're going to have those conditions all the time? But any time you have those conditions and the leaf is still relatively young and immature, will have more infection by new fungal spores that are falling onto the leaves. And so in a season, you can have many, many sets of conditions like that, and it can go on into the summer. So from year to year, it's going to vary how much scab you have. And when you spray the leaves, it's really only going to prevent infection of the coming infection periods. And that's why the recommendation is to spray very early in the season when the leaves are just starting to emerge. In fact, they say that they should be about a quarter of an inch emerging from the bud. Quarter inch of green is all you should be able to see. Past that, it's kind of too late to spray.
Okay.
But we do recommend spraying 3 to 4 times within, I believe it's a 7 to 10 day period.
Yeah.
And those recommendations are in one of our fact sheets on our website. And it's very difficult to completely control apple scab, especially with one spray. One spray will not do it.
Yeah, and isn't it also true, Sharon, that you should get rid of the leaves that fall off?
Yes, very definitely. And to do it while they're falling during the season. So don't wait until fall to clean up all those leaves that have fallen all season. Try and get them as soon as you can, because those leaves will turn brown and brittle and break up. And then if you wait until the fall, all those ones that are breaking up are staying on the lawn. You're not getting all those pieces, and you're leaving all those spores. So you may need to rake repeatedly as leaves are falling throughout the season.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Bruce in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, how are you today?
Great.
Here's my question. I have two American elms in my front yard, and they appear generally healthy. I've had them pruned a couple of times. They're about 20 years old, But I'm noticing there's a lot of holes in the leaves as I was getting the mail this morning, and I'm wondering what might cause it. I don't think it's a Dutch elm, but I'm not sure what's causing it.
Yeah, that would not be Dutch elm. That's not one of the symptoms of Dutch elm. It's more likely an elm leaf beetle, and probably not causing too much of a problem with the plant, unless there are other American elms in the area that are infected with Dutch elm disease. Then they can transmit the Dutch elm disease. I don't know exactly what the timing is for treating them to prevent, you know, if you know that there are other American elms nearby, then it would be worth treating to prevent the elm beetles from spreading Dutch elm disease. But a lot of holes in the leaves, and there are several different beetles that will eat holes in the leaves of elms. And at this point in the season, you could probably just wait and not do anything. And as long as it still has plenty of leaves in the, on the canopy of the tree, it's not going to hurt the tree. We do have a publication on Dutch elm disease, and it would be something worth checking out. And that is on our publication's website, learningstore.uwex.edu. And you can either read it online or download it for your own collection.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Adrian and Mason. Hello to you.
Hi. I have an orchard that we just put in this spring. We have apple trees, pear trees, and hazelnut trees. And they've been struggling. We're in sand. We've been watering them very diligently in the morning, my husband has. But they have this problem with the leaves where they seem stunted and small and curling and kind of turning brown at the edges.
And I bet that's just because of transplant. It's a transplant shock, and it's they are trying to deal with, you know, having a compromised root system, having been transplanted, having moisture being demanded from the roots, and it's sort of a compromised root system. And even though you're keeping it well-watered, it can only take up so much water. And so that's probably the best they'll do this season. Even in sandy soil, putting a mulch over that soil is a good idea to help to retain moisture. And so if you haven't done that, I would add that.
We do have a mulch on them, and some of them actually have, like, green leaves that look like they're older apple tree leaves. And they were put in bare root very early.
Okay, I really would attribute it.
Some of them have already browned up and died.
But, again, I wouldn't necessarily write them off quite yet. They may have lost their leaves, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they've died. They can have enough carbohydrates stored that they would re-leaf, they'd leaf out again, or it may take until next year for them to leaf out again, so I wouldn't give up on those.
Okay, well, you know, they've got the policy, if they die, you know, you can get new ones. You hate to
wait until
you're...
Yeah, go ahead and try and get your warranty honored. Yes, that's a good point.
Okay. All right, well, we'll just, I guess, wait and see. And
just wait and see.
I have a little bug on my garden plants. They're like little tiny leaf hoppers, and I don't know if those are spittle bugs. I know I've seen that, too.
Probably a leaf hopper. There are all different kinds of leaf hoppers, and they have different hosts, and
Piola. Would that get rid of them?
What's that?
Yeah, I have something called Piola. It's got the pyrethium and...
Well, check the label on that and see if it has leaf hopper on it and the crop that you're going to spray it on. Then it would be worth trying. And also check that label for any temperature restrictions, because if it gets too hot when you spray it, you may damage the leaf tissue on the plants. And are they, like, all over on all different kinds of plants?
Mostly right now I'm seeing them on the amaranth or the love lice bleeding.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would read the label on that and check. And then if not that, neem oil is another suggestion, and I believe leafhopper is on that label. It won't be called neem oil. It'll be called, sometimes it's called a three-in-one product because it can be a fungicide, an insecticide, and a miticide. But when you look at the active ingredients, it'll say an extract of neem oil. And that, too, that has a very broad label, so you can use it on a lot of things and to control a lot of different insects, and it is organic.
In the last 30 seconds, what can you do for squash and cucumber beetles? Joan and Iola even tried a portable dustbuster to vacuum them.
That's a good idea. Try to pick them off if you can. Otherwise, you may need to spray. Those are tough. And squash beetles and cucumber beetles probably need to be treated. Rotenone probably is a good organic product to use on that. You can use 7 to control them as well. But they are worth controlling because you can have problems down the road from them.
Sharon, a great pleasure. Happy 4th, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. Same to you.
Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Horticulture Agent, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.